On Friday, October 26th, Thirsty City hosts Los Angeles-based Mike Slott and Jansport, along with sets by Omari Jazz, Rap Class, Bravo Domo, and Slurgeon. KBOO's Northern Draw will also be DJing. Again, that's Thirsty City at the Liquor Store, 3341 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, listener-supported community radio.
Good morning. Today is Monday, October 22nd, 2018, and you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. If you are listening, you're listening on in Portland 90.7, Hood River 91.9, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, via the World Wide Web. It is KBOO.FM. I am Cecil Prescott, and this is More Talk Radio. Let me give you our phone numbers if you would like to call in and be part of our conversation. To call in, Heather will be the voice you hear, and then they will put you on hold, and when we have an opening, allow you to participate and share your wisdom with the larger audience. So our numbers here in the studios are 503-231-8187. And I have I saw a message that's Dennis left me last week, and I'm sorry I didn't see it before. I just saw it this morning, and he mentioned an inquiry. Last week we quoted from Langston Hughes, I Too Sing America, and that's the name of the poem, I Too Sing America. So Google it or go to your favorite almanac or poetry and you will see that. Joining us this morning are representative, singular, I hope to expand it to plural, of the Grey Panthers. Now, some of you may or may not be familiar with Grey Panthers, and we'll talk a little bit about the history and the organizing that this group of activists are involved in. Joining us is Lou Church, who is a coordinator for the Grey Panthers. Welcome. Thank you, Lou.
Good morning, Cecil. Thanks for having us. Sally and Brian said they were coming, so we'll see if they arrive. I think you mentioned Celeste is expected at some point as well.
Celeste is as an emergency. She won't be able to join us this morning.
Oh, at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
But she might call in or share some of her wisdom with us.
Sure.
Great. So who are the Grey Panthers?
Well, the Grey Panthers historically, Sally was going to talk about this, but I can certainly sub about history and philosophy. Grey Panthers were started by Maggie Kuhn, K-U-H-N, about 1975. She liked the name of Black Panthers as an activist, radical grassroots group, and she felt that because she was getting fired from her job at age 65, working for a liberal church back east, that she felt it would be also important to have a grassroots radical activist group to advocate for elders and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
In Portland, we started up our chapter a year ago. It's still in process. It's an organizing project. We're trying to use current practice in terms of being intergenerational, intersectional, so that a couple of us did a presentation a week ago in Multnomah to a grassroots group to 25 people, mostly about the upcoming election. It was a very intensely popular topic. But what people had, it was Sunday Assembly, and they're apparently UK and US. We hadn't really heard of them before, but they're very interested in the election. But one of the questions that people asked and did there was, how is Grey Panthers different from progressive or socialist, feminist, left-wing groups overall? Because we tend to, at least in Portland, we tend to focus on social justice stuff. So housing, police accountability, immigration, the election. Historically, some of us as organizers have worked a lot on boycotts. The Taco Bell boycott at Portland State, the Nestle boycott a long time ago, which I think Cecil helped on at one point at the Portland building. There are a couple different boycotts against Coca-Cola. We think holding corporations is really, really important. I should say that nationally, currently for Grey Panthers, the organization has waxed and waned over time. At one point, there was paid staff and an office, I believe, in Washington, D.C. Currently, there's an informal network in 20 states of Grey Panthers. From what we can tell, New York City looks to be the most active chapter, but it's pretty much internet. There's no like conference where people from the 20 different cities get to meet in person. That's one of the things that when we do fundraising, and a couple of us have done a lot of fundraising in the past, we want to do is we'd like to see the Grey Panthers chapters meet together in person for a conference. Not necessarily in Portland, because we're not very geographically central. But so overall, I'd say that the main focuses at the moment are housing and the Portland, we're based out of Portland State, and that's absolutely intentional that we want the organizing to be intergenerational and intersectional. So housing is one of the things we've worked on and continue to work on, advocating for rent control. We're also supportive of SUSU and student government and a great number of students and faculty in the Disarm Portland State campaign for Jason Washington. So that's sort of a thumbnail. It's probably not quite as thorough. If Sally's able to get in, she'll probably have a better answer for your question.
But certainly, I mean, that's certainly an introduction, and I really appreciate that. So just a little bit more about the organization. So you mentioned the intergenerational, intersectional,
sure.
Which... buzzwords a lot. So the base of your organizations are people a certain age? Is it intersectional? But your priorities are older people or the base of your organization or not?
That's a good question. In terms of the Portland chapter, I think that our base tends to be actually low-income tenants. So to some extent, that tends to be some older or disabled tenants, either with government landlords or nonprofit landlords. So Home Forward, Central City Concern, we did like 104 meetings, some of us as organizers in the past, with tenants from the Butte and Biltmore buildings downtown, low-income tenants. So Home Forward, Central City Concern, Northwest Housing Alternatives, some of the nonprofit groups that manage housing in Portland. The intersectionality part is somewhat aspirational. You mentioned they're kind of buzzwords, intergenerational, intersectional. But I know that we've gone, one of the things that we're doing that we kind of asked about helping do this program on KBOO today is there's a conference that we're doing next Saturday, which is called the Aging Not So Well with Trump Conference. It's at Portland State at Chit Chat Cafe at 12 noon on Saturday, October 27th. And it's a forum and a discussion program for people to come. We've invited speakers to come as well. We've had speakers in the past. But the reason we called it that is because in the past 2 weeks, some of us have been going to three different specific conferences in Portland that seem to be geared towards the older traditional stereotype. Sally is great at talking about this. Sorry to mention her twice, but we'll see if she comes. That these were conferences. There was one at the Convention Center, which is a commercial conference, which I didn't go to myself, but it was basically a private for-profit company trying to let people in an age category, maybe over 50, know about things that they could buy or services they could get. There was this past weekend, in fact, Sally went to it, at Reynolds High School. And this was coordinated by a thing called Multnomah County Council on Aging, which is a group I volunteer for. It's federally mandated, but the group itself is volunteers. It's managed by Multnomah County staff. And their conference tended to be, it had 20 nonprofits and about 200 people. And it was fairly diverse because it was in East County, which is good. They moved it from University of Portland last year when I went to that conference. And again, their Sally told me that she went to it and they didn't have any organizing workshops. Mm-hmm. The focus was not change or the election or disarm PSU or housing or advocacy, right. Which is Gray Panthers is always focused on advocacy and organizing, which is what we're mm-hmm. doing now. Basically, Sally is frustrated because she's 70. She's someone who's somewhat disabled with a cane. She's a great grandma, and she's job hunting. So this goes to Maggie Kuhn's original impetus for starting Gray Panthers. Yes. And she's found it somewhat problematic, despite there being 3% unemployment officially on job hunting. And basically what we've seen at those two conferences, there was a third one as well, is that conferences for quote-unquote older people tend to focus on things they can buy or do, and volunteering for nonprofits, which is usually a good thing, but we'd like to see more in terms of older folks. I mean, one of the criticisms of the 2016 election was that older white women in particular voted for Trump, perhaps less so in Oregon as a blue state, but we'd like to see at least within that category, and we're not organizing exclusively with older folks, be more active, for example, with anti-racist organizing or anti-sexist organizing. And there's lots of grassroots groups and nonprofit groups in Portland that do that.
So to differentiate yourself from other organizations,
right.
So you emphasis on social justice and advocacy rather than creating programs or projects.
So far, correct. So far. We may do programs and projects when we do fundraising, foundation grants, or apply for 501c3 status, which we do want to do, or C4 or a PAC. We've done, I have a thing called, as a low-income older person these days, a thing called an IDA. It's called an individual development account. Apparently, Trump cut the funding for it. It was an Obama program and existed back in the war on poverty under OEO and LBJ. But it's still funded by the state of Oregon. It's basically a matching program. I think I was told I'm the oldest person in the thing. I'm 64 now. It's basically you put a certain amount as a low-income person into an account, which then gets matched by local nonprofits. There are three nonprofits that have individual development accounts. Mercy Corps, which at one point matched 9-to-1. Reach, which is a nonprofit landlord. That's the nonprofit I'm working with on my IDA. And they match 3-to-1. And I think Home Forward, as a government landlord, also has a program, which is an IDA, individual development account. And so that's one way to try to these nonprofits will match it. After 3 years, you have a small amount of money, maybe $10,000, mm-hmm. depending, a lot more. Mercy Corps would have more. You could start a business, which could be a nonprofit or a for-profit. You can do school, but not student loans. So that, I don't fit that category. Or you can buy a house or do something like a down payment for a house. But we want to, as Gray Panthers, try to do organizing that's more focused and strategic. For example, this, in addition to the conference we're going to be doing next Saturday at school at Portland State, we're doing, people often get frustrated, but we'll still stick with trying to talk to Portland City Council. For example, when some of us did housing organizing with low-income tenants, we brought them 10 different times to talk to City Council. We're doing that again this Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm speaking this morning with Lou Church of the Portland Gray Panthers organization. Our numbers, if you have a question or comment, so give us a call, 503-231-8187. It seems as if you have a wide agenda, and a couple of things I want to focus on,
sure.
on this morning to make sure that people know about. One is, how do people contact you, contact the Gray Panthers?
Sure. Well, Gray Panthers, after some debate, we decided we would do a Facebook page. So Gray Panthers in Portland is Portland Gray Panthers 2018,
mm-hmm.
Portland Gray Panthers 2018 on Facebook.
Okay.
We'll, of course, change it when we get to next year. There's also an email address, which is hard to remember, but I can give that, and there's a phone number. The phone number is 503-222-2974, and there's voicemail. The email address is letters and numbers. So usually the way I try to describe it is it's POB. It's like post office box, but that's not it. It's POB 40011 at juno.com, J-U-N-O, not that popular location, but that's what it is. So those are ways to contact. There's also usually meetings Saturdays at 4 p.m., although this particular Saturday, the 27th, our meeting will be at 12 noon, like I said, for the conference at Chit Chat Cafe. So that's a really, we've had probably 10 different tenants from 10 different buildings during the summer and fall come to those meetings. And Chit Chat is at PSU. It's 1907 Southwest 6th, probably said before. Maybe not. It's next to Hot Lips Pizza on Green Max. It's a block off of Broadway. So that's the contact information. Great. Answer to that question.
Great. Yeah, I think it's important to know and for people who are interested in reaching out and becoming, joining you in your activism and organizing. It's great to hear. Talk a little bit more about Aging Not So Well. You mentioned your associate went to a conference and noticed that it was geared not towards issues or particular concerns of them, but not concerned about in terms of advocacy or social justice issues that the Grey Panthers are involved with. So aging, people aren't aging well in the age of Trump?
Well, as Cecil's program and other KBOO programs point out often, and some other media in Portland point out as well, there's two Americas. John Edwards, a name from the past, who got into some questionable campaign activities, apparently.
Oh, see? You say a name from the past. I thought you meant Jonathan Edwards.
No, this guy ran for, I think he ran for president, and he was vice president on John Kerry's ticket in 2004.
Okay.
And then he got into a scandal.
Okay. A name from the past, I was thinking 18th century, but no.
But
okay.
John, this particular politician, who is a liberal Democrat and a lawyer, I believe from North Carolina, he used to talk about the rich and the poor, and lots of other people talk about that too. It's not unique to the United States, but it's far more pronounced and dramatic and onerous under Trump. It's also true in other countries. Apparently, Russia, China, we were talking to organizers yesterday about this, Russia, China, and India at the moment seem to be countries where there's a great deal of industrial development, much like the Pearl in Portland. Lots of affluent people making a good salary or more than a good salary. And then there also seems to be what some writers would call the underclass, but it's not even just poor people. It's like people like union organizers would argue who have regular day jobs, but in terms of salary, don't make that much money. One of the people that we've talked to and we've networked with is Homer Williams, who's somewhat controversial in Portland, but he's a housing advocate, but he's also a real estate business person. And Homer Williams, along with Israel Baer, who was with Street Roots for 15 years, both say their primary concern with the housing crisis, which is a national problem, not just Portland, is seniors who've worked their whole lives, maybe didn't make as much money as Phil Knight or Trump or just lawyers or doctors, and now find themselves. We talked to one gentleman who was in and out of the shelter system. He was 70 years old. The shelter system, I haven't listened to a program on cable that talked about how the shelter system in Portland works, but organizing low-income tenants, one of the things we researched and discovered was that most shelters, like TPI, which does good work, transitional projects, you can stay for a little while, and then you have to figure out how to generate money in order to get into wait lists on low-income housing. And this particular Dan person was saying that, well, he never figured out how to generate enough funds, I'm not sure what his Social Security situation was, to get out of the shelter system. So he would go out and camp out. This is what Homer and Israel both said, is that, as we know, there's tons of people, thousands of people, who are camping outside, sleeping on sidewalks. When I went to one of the conferences on Max, I noticed how many people, stop after stop, are outside in tents. This was like a few days ago. So we think that there's a way to do, there seems to be, Sally and I have talked about this quite a bit, the other organizer that was hopefully coming, two factions on housing in Portland. One is kind of the Nick Fish government nonprofit sector who say housing is a very long time, not insoluble, but a project that you can't fix overnight. And then there's Newt Bueller and kind of the, to some extent, I'm not sure who's endorsed who, among Jordan Schnitzer or the guy who owned Tim Scott, Columbia Sportswear, Homer Williams, kind of the business people who feel like, well, this is a big problem, we should do something now. And Homer Williams in particular, I've been able to talk to at his office, has suggested or had positions on five different things in terms of homeless shelters for houseless people. The current one that doesn't seem like it's going that far, although it's kind of an issue trying to be raised by Loretta Smith and Jordan Schnitzer in the city council campaign, with Joanne Hardesty as the other candidate, is Wapato Jail. It's in North Portland. Loretta Smith has always advocated that as a place to put houseless people.
So let me get a focus
sure.
here. So the issue is in terms of housing and availability of housing
right.
and different strategies of housing.
Right.
What is it that Grey Panthers, in terms of addressing the issues of lower income seniors, which model, or have you created another model in which to meet the needs of this segment of our population?
Sure. Well, between those two factions, I was just going to say parenthetically, Dean Giswold is one of the main advocates. He just had he used to be Portland School Board Chair, used to be Board Chair of Central City Concern, a $70 million nonprofit housing corporation. He had an article, an op-ed in the Oregonian, explaining why the Haven of Hope or Harbor of Hope idea, which is Homer Williams' idea, is a bad idea, that it's just not practical. So between these two competing ideas, do something now, but it's not clear what. And I was going to say that Newt Bueller said he wants to expand CITLI statewide. And Newt Bueller also, he's running for governor against Kate Brown, also came out against the housing bond, which maybe I shouldn't be surprised about that. But as a third alternative or a proposed solution, we are trying to consist, and we have for a long time as organizers, advocate for rent control. Now, it doesn't mean that rent control is the one, only, perfect solution. But rent control is legal in New York City, it's legal in Berlin, it's legal in San Francisco. And because there are preemption laws in Oregon, and rent control has been one for a while, we think legalizing rent control in Oregon would be a great step forward. The preemption
okay.
laws prevent local municipalities or cities or areas from voting for rent control. And there's four or five different preemptive law things in different areas.
So just
sure.
to continue on that in terms of which those things which makes it impossible for local jurisdictions to advocate or to create rent control. Are there movement to advocate in the state legislature to make changes?
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, one of the differences in the campaigns, I mean, we support Joanne Hardesty for city council, is that Joanne supports rent control.
Meaning Grey Panthers.
Correct.
Okay.
Sorry. No, you know, I've done guest hosting too. I know we need to clarify. That rent control is something Joanne Hardesty's campaign supports, rent stabilization. Loretta Smith, not so much. Loretta Smith just got a donation from.
But wait a second.
Yeah,
the question is there movement to work with the state legislature, or are you working with these candidates on the local?
Both.
Both. Okay.
Sure. I mean, I'm just assuming because I know Cecil's an organizer, but last year in this legislative session, which some of us went to support rent control, there is Rod Monroe, who was defeated in the primary election. He was a state legislator, a senator. He's a Blue Dog Democrat. He was defeated. Shemaya Fagan replaced him. Casey Jama also ran, and we supported Casey. And he was the person who blocked rent control in the Senate last legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
The House passed the bill for rent control and other tenant protections. Governor Brown, Kate Brown, was ready to sign it. But Rod Monroe was a landlord and had questions about rent control, he blocked it. There seemed to be a few other senators that also sort of had questions about some of the tactics of some housing advocates, particularly PTU, Portland Tenant United, Rod Monroe is a deacon in his church and they picketed his church. So there were some comments in newspaper articles by Jeannie Burdick, who we think is great on gun control as a state senator, and Lou Frederick, who used to be Portland Public Schools spokesperson, saying they questioned that they felt pressured unfairly, that it was unfair to picket someone's church. Traditionally kind of a right to life sort of tactic.
So Senator Monroe was defeated, an opponent, person who who has the seat now is someone who advocates for
Shemaya Fagan, and I may be mispronouncing her first name. Her last name's F-A-G-A-N, took over Rod Monroe's district. So, and there's no Republican opposition, so she should get elected in November. So, yes, so the idea is that they'll implement rent control in the next legislative session, but you have to keep track that that actually occurs. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You are listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We are speaking this morning with Lou Church of the Portland branch of the Gray Panthers, a social justice advocacy group. And give us a call if you have questions or comment. They're sponsoring a conference this Saturday.
Correct.
At PSU.
Correct. 12 noon.
Is there a anyone can come?
No, it's open discussion. We usually say we've heard from the chief of staff from Ted Wheeler's office that he's been interested in coming to our forums, and he may come, not confirmed. We've also been contacting and hearing from the scheduler for Daniel Outlaw, who's the police chief. I think one of the morning hosts have been trying to get her on KBOO. But that they're both interested in coming, and they have to confirm whether this will be a day and time. One of the advantages of Gray Panthers is that some people, not everyone, but a fair amount of people have heard of them in the past, both from Maggie Kuhn, Ron Wyden at one point in the 70s was a Gray Panthers organizer, mm-hmm. advocating for nursing home ombudsmans in Oregon. And the person I know, I don't remember if I asked Cecil before, if you had ever met Bobby Gary, but Bobby Gary was a Life Center organizer in North Portland. I knew her because she was on the board of the food bank where I did fundraising.
Right.
And she was an organizer for Gray Panthers in Portland as well. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, my question was can anyone come to the conference?
Right.
Okay.
No, we do. It's an open discussion forum. We do ask people to be polite, basically. For example, one of our organizers has been telling us about we're going to city council Wednesday morning, and it sounds like there may be some alt-right protesters on police issues and Antifa and Proud Boys and DSA this week, today, tomorrow, and Wednesday in Vancouver and in Portland.
Okay, right.
But for the conference.
Okay,
right.
Anyone can come.
Right, and if it's people try to disrupt, there's no real reason to disrupt it.
Okay, but
we would
anyway.
Ask them to leave if they were trying to disrupt.
Okay,
yeah.
But it's open for people to participate.
And it's free. There's no cost. It's one of the advantages. The third conference I didn't even mention was at Portland State on older people, quote unquote. And they had a speaker from UCLA, a teacher, a Chicano professor, but it was $100 to get in. So that cut out a bunch of us from even being, that was last Friday.
Okay. So this is a conference sponsored by the Gray Panthers this Saturday at PSU. It's open and free to the public. Our number is here, 503-231-8187. Give us a call if you have a comment or question. Ron, thank you for your patience. You are on the air. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. Can I ask a couple questions? I would like to divide it between national and local, if we could.
Sure, good.
Well, I had to go into retirement at the age of 56 because of a fractured neck disability. And I'll just give a comparison. My older brother has been able to keep working at a job. He's pretty well settled in a job, and he's at 70. So he can draw about three times the Social Security that I can get, and then he has a comparable private pension from the company. And you look at people with PERS retirements and things like that, and actually there's quite a lot of them, too, you know, where they've had plenty of time at work and they don't have Social Security, or that spouse makes money. I mean, I've seen now that there's all kinds of tactics that people can use to really maximize the Social Security benefit, and maybe they got a 401k. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of Social Security recipients that are at this lower end and are kind of stuck there. And so if anything happens on the national level, I'd like to see, you know, that kind of even out more, because it really is quite a difference. And when you're stuck at the lower end, it doesn't mean that you wasted your opportunities, or, you know, were shiftless or something. You know, mm-hmm. It's just you're kind of stuck there. So, you know, I know Wyden used to do something with the Gray Panthers. Well, okay. Then the other thing locally, and we were talking about housing, there was a deal in Clackamas County in the 80s that I always thought was really good. And, you know, you never know where these ideas are going to go at the time, whether it's a new trend or what. But Clackamas County had a deal where they helped a group of families build homes. And they did it under the direction of a contractor that they hired. So the people put the effort in and had, you know, expert direction. They got everything done, you know, the codes and everything. So they were able to move from being renters to homeowners. And I had always thought that was really a good government program, you know, where you're actually getting the people doing stuff, but they have expert guidance. And I work in construction, so I have a lot of knowledge, you know, but I've thought, well, that was really a good government program that I wish we had more of. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about these housing issues, I think, you know, there's a lot of labor potential. It's kind of going to waste because their governments are taking a less direct approach to the housing issue.
Hey, thank you, Ron, for raising those issues. Lou, do you have a comment or response to Lon?
Well, for national, Mitch McConnell, as we've seen this last week.
Mitch McConnell is?
Senate Majority Leader for the Republicans and a right-winger. Has advocated, and the Republicans have done this for a long time nationally and state by state, cutting benefits, Medicare, Medicaid. Ben Carson, of course, is the housing secretary who's under Trump, who's proposed a 300% rent increase for low-income tenants who are in HUD buildings. But in terms of preventing the Republicans from enabling, implementing cuts, the more people that organize locally and then network nationally with Gray Panthers or other organizations, the more likely that the Republicans will continue to fail in trying to cut things. In terms of the differentiation that Ron asked about, one of the things since we met 104 Sundays every night with low-income tenants in several downtown buildings, we found is that for on disability with Social Security, for example, we'd have Marshall, who's one of the tenants who came, said, well, was getting the minimum amount, which is maybe $700 on Social Security, not that much to try to live on. And another person, Julia, who is a tenant in the building, also on disability, was getting about $1,200. And he was going, why is she getting almost twice as much? Mm-hmm. So inequality within the Social Security system is a good issue and another issue. I'd say nationally, Gray Panthers as a network has been focusing on fighting proposed cuts. But I think raising the issue of what's a decent standard of living and what are ways to try to make that happen, both for workers and people who are no longer working or not able to work. I think George McGovern, a while back, proposed guaranteed annual income. Some countries, probably in Europe more than others, have gone with the idea, I think there's a city in California that proposed doing this and maybe doing it already, basically that each person's important. And it's important that they have at least a decent life in terms of housing, healthcare, basic human rights. Sure. So I think that's also a good idea. In terms of the mobilizing government with, I guess, builders or labor or entrepreneurs, real estate people, it's one of the things we hope to do with Homer and his cohorts, Homer Williams, is to see if there are ways that Homer may be able to help as a volunteer or a donor and ask his friends to put together more solutions rather than this really kind of the, I mean, we support the housing bond, absolutely, which is on the ballot for raising about $600 million to build low-income housing. But that is some, but it doesn't solve the problem. So we want to see more things done faster. We just don't support the jail idea as a houseless solution. Did you have other comments? Are you still there?
No, he's
okay,
went
sorry.
On. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. We're speaking with Lou Church with the Portland Gray Panthers, and we will go to Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, you know, one of the problems with housing is the urban growth boundary, because all the housing is concentrated within a certain boundary. Mm-hmm. Outside the urban growth boundary is plenty of room. But what I hear from this one guy some contradictions, because you can't look at the housing problem without first looking at census. And part of the problem is that you have a tremendous amount of people flowing into America, and since we're a sanctuary city, you're attracting a lot of people from South America that's coming into this city. So how can you be for housing and also for being a sanctuary city and an open border?
Okay, let's have Lou respond. And you mentioned two things. One was the urban growth boundary and the also sanctuary cities, which is a little bit outside of the purview of this program, but I'll give it to Lou to respond.
Well, in terms of Gray Panthers, sanctuary city is something that we think is really important, and it sounds like it's good to have disagreement and discussion on sorts of issues. But the whole thing about, in fact, one of the things on intergenerational stuff I was going to mention before is Luis Balderas Villagrana is student body president at Portland State, and he's a dreamer. So he's under the DACA program and under threat. He's going to come with us Wednesday morning and speak. I just talked to him on the phone yesterday. At City Council at 9:30 at Portland City Council Wednesday morning, this Wednesday. So we actually, in terms of the buzzwords of intersectionality, see these issues being related. The attack by the right in Portland and nationally and in Europe on immigrants, on poor people who are houseless. We actually did a forum a month ago that compared how police respond both to immigrants and to houseless people. Like over 50% of the arrests in Portland by the police are apparently of houseless people. So we think that needs to be fixed. So in terms of the caller raises a very good question in terms of systemic solutions. So we talk about this a fair amount at meetings. Is the overall problem that there are too many people, that Europe and the United States are the affluent countries, so immigrants want to come where there's a better life and less violence and less threat, probably so. In the long run, is the solution that there needs to be equal distribution of resources so that people have a decent life? I think Beto, I don't remember his last name, he's running for against Ted Cruz in Texas. Beto O'Rourke, I think is his last name. He just proposed, well, if there's so much violence in Central America, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, maybe U.S. foreign policy should be geared towards fighting poverty in those places so that people in their own communities can stay put and feel safe. And as someone who Portland State paid for me to go for a week to El Salvador, I think that's a really good idea. The first question this caller raised was in terms of
The urban growth boundary.
The urban growth boundary is built on the idea that many cities want, including Portland, of course, what they consider livable cities. And that's focused on density. So the idea is in Portland, although there's never been a proposal by a candidate or an elected official, for example, to ban cars in downtown Portland, there used to be Fairless Square, which was an easier way for people to access TriMet. But the idea is that you want walkable neighborhoods. And this may be a good idea or a bad idea. I think it's a good idea. But the idea of UGBs, urban growth boundaries, is to try to help people in urban centers make their neighborhoods more livable. In terms of gentrification, which I'm not sure this caller was asking about, displacement. So one of the people that we've invited to talk on Saturday is Lisa Bates, who's chair of urban studies at Portland State, who's a national expert, has been on national television, talking about right to return in Portland in terms of displacement and redlining of traditionally black neighborhoods where poor people are getting frozen out of North Portland and increasingly people of color move to East County. So this particular caller on these two questions raises very good and somewhat complicated questions in terms of what is the solution short term, what's the solution long term.
Excellent. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We are continuing our conversation with Lou Church of the Portland Gray Panthers. They are sponsoring a workshop, a gathering this Saturday at Portland State University, aging not so well in the Trump era.
Under Ben Carson in particular.
The housing secretary. And where specifically will it be the conference this Saturday?
It's at Chit Chat Cafe, which is next to Hot Lips Pizza. It's 1907 Southwest 6. It'll start at 12 noon on Saturday, this Saturday, October 27th. It's on Green Max, which Orange and Yellow Max also run on the north-south line. Mm-hmm. It's a block off of Broadway, which is the main street that goes through downtown Portland and Portland State. I should also mention that one of the things we're working on, we haven't mentioned so far, and it's fine if Cecil doesn't want to go to it too far, but we've been supporting at PSU as an intersectional issue and one that we think is really important. Black Lives Matter, Don't Shoot Portland, and specifically the Jason Washington campaign. KBOO's probably addressed this a fair amount already, but the current status of that campaign, since some of us are Portland State people, I got my master's at PSU, the current status is there are three demands. A permanent memorial for Jason Washington, that both police officers, campus police involved with shooting and killing Jason, be fired, one of them has already left, so there's one still there of those two officers, and that Portland State, with huge input from faculty and students for 3 years at least, disarm the campus police. For 47 years, campus police at PSU did not have guns. They now have guns. We noticed that Lars Larson from another station was on campus last week doing a forum for the small but well-funded College Republicans with huge posters with guns and semi-automatic weapons talking about why the Second Amendment is really important for those people. It looks like there's at least ostensibly a pro-gun protest over the next 3 days by the alt-right Proud Boys, a couple days today and Tuesday in Vancouver. And then we hear there's going to be a protest Wednesday morning downtown by City Hall, which might involve DSA, Antifa, Proud Boys.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. Our conversation is with Lou Church of the Gray Panthers. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. They're sponsoring a conference this week. Again, at Portland State University, Aging Not So Well is open to the public, and there is no fee, so anyone is able to come. And I want to shift gear a little bit in terms of asking the Gray Panthers reflections on this coming election season. There are a number of ballot measures, both locally and statewide, and I'm assuming that Gray Panthers have taken positions on some of those.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
You want to talk about them?
Sure. Thanks for asking that question. I was hoping actually to try to discuss both the election and how or whether endorsements or negative campaigning matter. Statistics show that both endorsements and negative campaigning matter a lot in terms of swing voters in the middle who aren't political junkies. Yeah. So for specific issues and endorsements, which we're monitoring, it's one of the things we talked about a week ago at a presentation we did. We support pretty much Defend Oregon's positions on statewide ballot measures. So no to 103, no to 104, no to 105, no to 106. 105 is the bill to repeal sanctuary state status, which we think is a bad idea. Ted Wheeler just at Portland State negotiated or debated why that's a bad idea. We thought that was good. We know the mayor's under criticism from the left and the right, but he was one of the spokespeople for that, against that measure. We had a speaker from NARAL, the No on 106 campaign, talk at Portland State. And we also think that with Kavanaugh and Roe v. Wade, and it's very important to protect women's reproductive health care. Mm-hmm. In terms of candidates, we support Kate Brown for governor, and we, being Portland Gray Panthers, supports Joanne Hardesty for city
council. The question was about ballot initiatives and things that people are voting. Is there, but it's important for your list of endorsement for people to know. If they want to know, like, your positions, is it, can you go to your Facebook page?
Correct,
and stuff like that?
Correct.
Great. So you mentioned two ballot initiatives.
Statewide.
Are there other ballot initiatives?
We did a survey at our last presentation, 25 people, informal, not scientific or statistically valid, both about the three local, we believe, progressive ballot measures, campaign finance reform, the Clean Energy Fund, and what's the third one for local one? Those two, and there's a third one. I don't have it in front of me, but that we like. And then the statewide ones tend to be, the housing bond, of course, the most obvious one. So we support those three locally and think they're very important. Hopefully, the housing bond will pass. The campaign finance reform will pass. In terms of endorsements, which I was hoping to mention, sorry, I went too far into candidates.
I just want to sure. focus. Right, I right. mean, we can talk about a range of issues, sure. but we have a limited time. And Jay is waiting to ask you.
Talk to Jay.
Okay. Good morning, Jay. Thank you for waiting.
Hello?
Yes, you are on the air.
Yes. First of all, I really don't like conflating DSA with alt-right and Proud Boys. DSA stands for nonviolence, and as well as affordable housing. But don't throw those people together with DSA.
DSA is
Democratic Socialist.
The Democratic Socialist of America.
Okay.
Most of us at Portland State think DSA is a great organization, and perhaps I should clarify. I'm trying to follow.
Well, maybe
what Cecil's
I'm
been
trying
saying.
To focus They're, our conversation. Sure. Lou is all over.
Okay. But, well, yes. We work on a variety of stuff, but no, DSA is an ally. DSA is against the alt right. So I probably just mentioned those too fast, too quickly to try to follow Cecil's. Focus. Focus on focus.
Hey, thank you, Jay.
Do you still have me?
Yes, yes.
Can you hear me?
Continue. Yes,
yes.
Jay.
The other thing, I'm curious about the status of Raging Grannies. Are they still functional?
Yes, absolutely. Edie, who is one of our organizers, also works on a variety of, she's done KBOO with us, a variety of activist projects, but she's a member of Raging Grannies. We've also talked with Diane, who managed Maria Garcia's campaign for county commission in the primary in May. Raging Grannies, according to Edie, primarily does support work. They've been very involved as older people, quote unquote, as elders, in supporting social justice stuff. To that extent, they're somewhat similar to Grey Panthers. And they continue to be very active. I believe Edie said that some of them are attempting to have them focus, like we're trying to do with housing and mm-hmm. disarm, like rent control and disarm PSU, on specific issues that they can organize on their own. I think it's great that they work on supporting stuff. And apparently they're also national and international, not just in Portland. But they seem to have right. been pretty visible and effective for a long time in Portland. Yes.
I was also curious, Friendly House has a program for trans folks to help them with aging trans folks, to help them with housing. Mm-hmm. Do you have any connection with Friendly House?
We plan to meet with the director of Friendly House, who is very friendly, helpful, and supportive, at a conference that we went to that they sponsored about a month ago. And in terms of trans and LGBTQ community, it seems like Friendly House is on housing and other issues. One of the main resources, a little bit hard to get to from TriMet, but the 15 bus does go there in Northwest Portland. Mm-hmm. So we see them as absolutely an ally. There's also a couple paid staff who work with a group. Apparently, you may know more about this than us, but there's three groups that have the same acronym, SAGE, S-A-G-E. And SAGE is one of the groups that's based out, one of them, out of Friendly House.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. when we talked to their staff, they said they're actually paid by Friendly House, not SAGE itself, even though they work on SAGE issues. And SAGE apparently is also national. And then there's a couple other SAGE groups as well. But yeah, we think right. Friendly House is a good resource for people who can find it. And we've had a couple people from downtown who are fairly close say, where is it? Yeah, where is it?
Yeah. Hey, Jake, other things, yes. thoughts on your mind?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much for calling. Let me remind all of you that you are listening to KBOO coming up this morning on KBOO as OMO Variety Hour at 9 a.m. At 10, Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein welcomes two organizers who are fighting the development of liquid natural gas terminals in the Northwest. At 11, Making Contact looks at the crossroads in the struggle against climate change and the activists forging new ways forward. 11:30, Voices for the Animals, talking to artist Sue Cole about her new book, Zoo Its Side. Okay, Z-O-O-C-I-D-I-E. Okay. Seeing cruelty, demanding abolition. And all these programs are brought to you by your friendly people, members of KBOO. And if you want to be a member of BOO, go to kboo.fm and click on donate. But for the next few moments, we're continuing our conversation with Lou Church of the Portland Grey Panthers. And for someone who just turned on their radio right now or listening on a podcast sometime in 40 years from now, how might people get in touch with Grey Panthers and tell us something about some of your activities this coming week?
Sure. Well, with this coming week, as we've mentioned on Cecil's program, there's a conference at Portland State. It's the Aging Not So Well Conference under Trump. It's open to everyone, regardless of age or disposition. It's at Chit Chat Cafe at 12 noon, Saturday, October 27th, this coming Saturday. Chit Chat is 1907 Southwest 6th, next to Hot Lips Pizza. It's on Green Max. It's a block off of Broadway. In terms of contacts, Facebook page for Grey Panthers in Portland is Portland Grey Panthers 2018, Portland Grey Panthers 2018. There's also a phone number, 503-222-2974 with voicemail. Email is pob40011@juno.com. Cecil was asking, since we're getting close to the end of the program, about election stuff. Mm-hmm. I was just going to mention that endorsements are interesting to follow, and I'd encourage people, if they have time, to write letters to papers like Willamette Week, which came out against the Clean Energy Fund, or the Tribune, which came out against the housing bond and for Newt Bueller for governor, which both of those, I think, are problematic endorsements.
And speaking of endorsements, you know, the last few days now, looking at the end of the television campaign of ads, and people are seeking not only influential, but people they can trust in terms of endorsements. Grey Panthers have a endorsement of candidates and issues that people should consult.
Correct.
and call you for help and guidance.
If they wish, sure. We would be kind of a more left activist, radical version of League of Women Voters. When we did a presentation a week ago, we debated whether we wanted to really just advocate or just see what people thought about the different issues. I should also mention that on M106, which is the ballot measure to abridge women's reproductive rights, we also find it problematic that groups that get advertised as nonprofits, as being quote unquote for change, like at one of the groups at the conference this weekend, said they took a neutral position on M106. And we're going, how can you this is called Elders in Action. We've heard from 10 different ex-members of that particular group. They were recently defunded by ONI, what used to be Office of Neighborhood Involvement downtown at City Hall, by Sukri and Chloe. And we think it's really important to advocate for women's reproductive rights, which in Oregon traditionally has been something that's been protected.
Let's see. Oh, we have Edie on the line. Thank you for waiting, Edie. Do you have a question or comment for Lou?
Yeah, I was listening on the radio in my car, and when I got out of the car and went back to my house, I may have missed it. When I last heard, Lou said that that there are three local things that we're voting yes on, and he forgot one of the three. I'm a fellow Portland Grey Panther, and we are for $26,199 for fair and adequate housing. And I just want to make sure that people know that, yes, we want the Portland Clean Energy Initiative, and we want the fair housing, and we want campaign finance and money out of politics.
Thank you, Edie. I'm glad you were able to get through.
Yes, indeed. Those probably when you went from your car to your house, I also reiterated the housing bond being one of the most important things that hopefully will pass, that we do support. It has widespread support. The only real opposition I've seen is from the Tribune and Newt Bueller to the housing bond. So did you have other thoughts on the election at the moment, Edie, if you're still there?
No, I think Edie went away because we only have a few more minutes, but we have time for Lou to continue talking about the Gray Panthers. Going forward, after the elections, sure, and all of that, what are things, are plans in terms of continuing organizing that Gray Panthers envision?
Sure. Well, the two things I've mentioned, rent control going into next year in the state legislature would be one. Second one would be the current focused campaign, Disarm PSU. The chair of the Board of Trustees, Rick Miller, resigned in the midst of this controversy this summer from Portland State. Mm-hmm. So one of the officers involved in the shooting, McKenzie, left already. Rick Miller is gone, so that's two people that have left because of the protests that have gone since Jason Washington was killed by campus police in the summertime. There's a second officer who's still there, who apparently is an econ student and was a sniper in the army in Afghanistan, Officer Dewey, who's still there. So one of the demands that SUSU and student government have been doing is for that officer to also be fired. Basically, these two police workers shot 17 times. 9 of the bullets hit Jason and killed him. Jason is a grandfather, African-American, a postal worker for 20 years, a Navy vet. He was the one person in a situation trying to do peacekeeping, and that's the person that was killed. The campus students and faculty have been very supportive in this case of Black Lives Matter, Don't Shoot Portland, and that there should be accountability. I happened to be in a news conference with the new university president, Ramat Shareshi, 2 weeks ago. And Ramat's very smart. He's an engineer. His family's from Iran. He's very soft-spoken. But so far what he says, his response to this situation, two or three things. He took down a temporary memorial for Jason Washington. The family and NAACP president, E.D. Montaigne, and student groups want there to be a permanent memorial for Jason. Mm-hmm. The cops to be disarmed on campus, which, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, they were for almost 50 years, and for this remaining police worker to also be fired.
Right. Those are the three demands that Gray Panthers and other organizers have in the campaign to disarm PSU. You are a activist organization and activist group, and Lou, I really appreciate your work that you have done over the years and continuing to struggle. We have 30 seconds. Why? What keeps you going?
Cecil Prescott.
No.
Well, we mentioned longevity, and one of the reasons we started working on Gray Panther stuff is some of us have been in and out of Portland more than once and moved away and moved back. Uh-huh. Cecil's someone I've known for a very long time. I'm not sure if we'd say Gettysburg, but we've both been working. I'm not sure if you consider yourself an elder now or not. But
I'm old.
But we think it's really important that in Maggie Kuhn and Bobby Gary's tradition, people feel that not feel hopeless. And we think one of the strategies of the Republicans generally, and Trump and Newt Bueller, is to discourage voters or voter suppression in Georgia. So that's why Edie and some of our other organizers are totally concentrating on turning out the vote in Oregon, not just assuming it's a blue state.
And I want to thank you for mentioning Barbara Gary, who's a friend of mine. She has a great family.
I wasn't sure if you had met her. But
Her daughter, her granddaughters are great activists here.
I've never met Ron Wyden, but I did work with Bobby Gary.
Okay. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio. Thank you, Lou. Stay tuned for more programming here on your community radio station, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Alebrijes, The Milagro Theater annual Día de los Muertos theater production running weekly on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays until November 11th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Alebrijes is a family-friendly production of real-life artist and Alebrijes creator Pedro Linares delves into his world and fictionalizes it to create this Día de los Muertos story. Full of mythical creatures, psychedelic jungles, song, dance, and larger-than-life puppetry. Again, that's Alebrijes, the Milagro Theater annual Día de los Muertos theater production running weekly on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays until November 11th at the Milagro Theater.